Podcast, Chicago's home for X-Wing discussion, strategy, and entertainment.
Episode 13 of the Gold Squadron Podcast. Here we are. I am with Gold Leader Ron Longhi.
Hello, everybody.
Our Director of Communications, Alex Maring.
Hey, everyone.
And the hand that moves all behind the scenes, Andrea.
What's up, guys?
I'm still trying to come up with a cool title. I'm sorry. That's all I have.
If you let her talk you into Gold General, I might just stab you.
And that's why I didn't. That's why I didn't say it. So today, what we're going to cover, there was a lot of news that came out. We had to change our original plan. So here's the plan. We're going to cover the new FAQ. We're going to cover the spoilers and give you our initial reactions for Sabine's TIE. And we're going to do step one of our How to Practice X-Wing series. Super excited about that. Let's get right into it because we have tons to cover. Here we go.
So some interesting stuff got revealed today. We got a brand new FAQ for all of the FFG-related games. But what we're going to focus on is X-Wing. And we've got some pretty, I would say, big meta-defining changes. Some clarifications. And just some other new information that I'm not sure will be relevant right now, but will be relevant in upcoming expansions.
So Deadeye is now small ship only. So ding dong, the witch is dead.
So yeah, that means that the traditional, well, I guess not anymore, but the past traditional triple jumpmaster list is dead. You're gonna have to find a different build. I was talking to Marcel, our North American champion, and he kind of says, Just to shake his fist at FFG, he wants to try to find another triple jump build that's going to work. Just for funsies.
Yeah, I mean, it'll be okay, but the triple jumps now are going to have to act in a fair world. They were doing unfair stuff, now they're going to have to do fair stuff, so it'll be a totally different ballgame.
Well, absolutely. They were locking and loading their torpedoes before their enemy was in range, and then their enemy moves toward them, and then they blow them out of the sky.
Not to mention, they didn't have to lock in on a specific ship. They could shoot anything that moves toward them. That's a big deal.
Absolutely. And I think with the artwork of Deadeye, if you've looked at it recently, it's Luke Skywalker when he's in the trench, and he's ready to shoot his proton torpedoes at the exhaust port. And he was in an X-Wing, you know. I feel that, you know, to make it thematic, make it small ship only, it still works.
It'll go back to the pile of where your Deadeyes were before Jumpmasters came out.
Well, here's my question, though. Guidance chips came out at the same time as the Jumpmaster. Mm-hmm. Do guidance chips make Deadeye more viable on a small ship?
A little bit, but honestly, what made Deadeye so powerful with a large combination of things that the Jumpmaster got, which was the EPT slot, two torpedo slots, so you can get that extra munitions and make the cost of those torpedoes not as much, guidance chips, and then the astromech slot for either the R4 or the overclocked. It was just a lot of cards that perfectly worked together, and they took away the most powerful one. And I don't see another ship currently in the game that can even come close to having all those slots.
Nope. Yeah. I mean, I was kind of thinking, what could you do in place of it? I mean, you won't be able to fit three of them in there, but if you put push to limit on there, you could kind of get at least the first alpha strike on. If you can get in range, you get your target lock plus focus, and then you still have your overclocked astromech to be able to recycle the focus token, but you're going to have to fly that in a way to, you know, be in range 3 to get the target lock, and that the enemy can't get into range 1, and kind of making your whole approach null.
Well, that's the key, right? Like, by giving Jumpmasters Deadeye on 3 pilot skill ships, they didn't ever have to worry about acquiring that target lock, and then when the combat came, that ship knows it's being target locked, So then the higher pilot skill ship could either boost or barrel roll out of the way and prevent you from firing off that missile or torpedo. Now with the target lock action, you're still going to only be able to target lock one ship, and your opponent knows that that's the ship that's targeted, so they can play around it, whereas Deadeye, you couldn't play around it before that much.
Now, I would say this, out of all the things in the FAQ, this is the one that's going to affect Worlds the most. And it's curious, we are now, 3 weeks away from Worlds. They dropped this huge change, right? One card that's going to change an entire meta. What are some things that we are going to see at Worlds now because the Triple Scouts, with their current form, is no longer exists?
Well, who wants to go first? Because I can name a lot.
Yeah, I can name one off the bat. So the U-boat really completely knocked out the old-school Y-wing Stress Hog. I think we're going to see that come back a little bit. Even though we now have the Stress Hog 2.0 with Braylon on the arc, I think there's maybe a three-point difference there. So we can, if you really need to squeeze those 3 points, you can go with the Y-wing instead. And that, in turn, can counter Imperial Aces a little bit by throwing in a little Rebel Control back into the mix. That's the first thing that jumped out at me. How about you, Ron?
Well, not just the Y-Wing. Pretty much most of the strong Rebel strategies now can come back into play because you're going to be able to have some kind of stress mechanic in your list. And also the importance of not being alpha-striked by multiple torpedoes in a single turn. It now will open up, you know, just good ships that were not played, like B-Wings, because they have 5 shields and 1 agility and 1 plasma torpedo can just take them out. Y-Wings, you know, the Poe Damerons of the world. All the things that were top tier in the past will come back. And now Rebels have some more strategy with the ARC 170s. So Rebels will be a top tier force. It will help a little bit with keeping some of the Imperials in check, which is important, but Manaru will not change. This will not affect them at all. So you're going to see that Dengar Manaru build still.
Another thing that is going to come back into the fold, which was really popular before the Jumpmasters, was Rebel Regen. With the Jumpmasters torpedoes, they were able to wipe anything that could regen before it even had a chance to. Now that strategy becomes a little bit more viable.
Oh yeah, it's just as viable as it was before. That's what I was saying by, you know, all Rebel strategies that were pretty viable, they're going to be viable again. The importance of this nerf really is just opening up the field of play for many more ships to be reasonable.
Let's continue down the rabbit hole of Rebels, because there was a pretty significant change here to probably, arguably, the most powerful Rebel effect, and that's Biggs Darklighter. So now, if you have a secondary weapon that could target a different ship, you don't have to target Biggs, for instance, with your primary weapon. If you have your target lock for a torpedo on a ship next to Biggs.
I don't think they ever meant Biggs to be as confusing as it ended up being. Like, so many people would just think, okay, well, if I'm trying to shoot my torpedo at this ship and I can't target Biggs with a torpedo, why should I have to shoot him with my primary? And it just led to confusion. I think this is a totally fine rule. I have no problem with it. Biggs is still going to be awesome at dying.
Yeah, we'll see if this affects anybody bringing Biggs or will deter anybody from bringing Biggs. It's still a good card, still very powerful. We'll just have to wait and see what happens in Worlds.
It'll be interesting to see if people bring Ordnance to the table to literally shoot at something that's not Biggs because of the target lock. So that'd be kind of interesting, but I don't really think, honestly, it's going to matter much.
Maybe now, hold on, with the Deadeye change and Biggs change, you get TIE Punishers with Deadeye. Huh? Actually, wait, that doesn't work because then you could target Biggs. Never mind. Dang it. You can still run TIE Punishers with Deadeye, though.
Sure, you can. I don't think we'll be seeing any at Worlds at the top table.
No, we won't. So let's talking about ships that we won't see at the top tables. There was a change to the heavy Sikh, whatever you want to call it, the heavy Sikh title, and it now gives the Sikh Interceptor an additional hull point. So that's a 3-point value right there. If you look at the cost of hull upgrade for free. But here's the question. Is that going to make the Sikh competitive now? One extra health.
Who wants to go first?
I will chip in a little bit. I don't think it's going to be what you start your list with. I think now they have a decent filler ship. I mean, it's a little bit better, but that dial is still pretty bad.
Yeah, you go to try to do a hard three, and you go, oh, crap, I can't. It's just not there. Maybe Sarasu is more viable now. Cause, I mean, she has the best ability out of all of them, being able to reroll green dice, which is a great perk, because we know that green dice suck. The extra health helps there?
I don't know. I still feel like they're a little bit too much of a glass cannon.
So let me ask you a question. Mm-hmm. If you could play an X-Wing right now, a T-65 X-Wing, and for 2 points, you could give that T-65 X-Wing one extra hull and let it equip a missile, a proton torpedo, or a cannon slot, would you play it?
For two points,
I would
probably take the hull and not equip a cannon, just because the opportunity cost with that. Because then I have to also pay for the cannon, or torpedo, or missile. Exactly. So maybe you just use it as a.
And you have two extra hull points, on that X-Wing. Yeah, you're saving a point on a hull upgrade, and I mean. The thing is, you still have a ship that has what? It has four hull now? Yeah, it has four hull now. So you have a cannon on it. So you've added 6 points to a four hull ship. I don't know. I don't see it. I don't see it as enough of a fix. Maybe I'm wrong. I haven't played it yet. But I was just trying to put it in terms of another ship that doesn't get a lot of play, that needs help. If giving you that same ability would make you want to play more of those ships. And I don't think I would.
Well, we'll have to wait and see. We'll have to wait and see. That definitely, I'm sure at least one person out there is thinking, yes, it's my time now to take my Sikh swarm out and win Worlds.
And if they do that, I will happily...
More power to them.
I will happily eat my humble pie on the next podcast.
Awesome. So let's go over a couple of the other ones. Those of you who like dropping bombs, Andrea, let them know what they're getting.
That's the best part of this. I have more bombs to drop.
And why is that, Ron?
Because cluster mines work like proxy mines now. They hit on hits or criticals, which is pretty exciting. If you get hit with a whole bunch of cluster mines in one turn, and like hitting someone with multiple crits would be pretty sick.
Well, there is, with the wording, I don't believe that crits are crits. They just proc a hit on you.
Oh, really? Right. I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's just a damage. They don't do critical damage. They just do damage.
Oh, bummer.
Mm-hmm. Like an asteroid.
So they're just a 50-50 shot. They don't actually... I didn't notice that. I just assumed when I saw the crit counted that it counted as an actual crit. Bummer. Well, I'm not as excited, but I'm a little more excited because I have acrylic cluster mines that I don't use.
Same here. Yeah. Yeah, so the actual wording on the FAQ is you roll 2 attack die and suffer 1 damage for each hit and crit rolled.
Okay, so crits don't... So they don't actually work like prox mines.
Right.
I still like it. But I'm not as excited as I was before.
50-50 shot. I mean, you can't.
That's, yeah, I mean, it's another one out of eight. Another 12%.
Yeah, well, I mean, think of every time you dropped a cluster mine on someone and they rolled all crits. What would have happened then? You know, it's more opportunities for damage, so it's still good in my book.
Yeah, I wouldn't know. I've never played the cluster mines over the prox mines since they've come out.
So now cluster mines with Sabine, right? That's what we're doing?
Yeah. Hey, why not? I mean, I'd give it. I mean, the nice thing about cluster mines, right, is it gives you this huge radius to hit someone with a bomb. So with Sabine, it's great because now you have three opportunities to trigger Sabine.
And the last thing here that we want to at least point out specifically in the FAQ is there was this really big section added. I believe this was added to all of the FFG games, and it was about open, derived, and hidden information. Now, one of the lines that's getting specific attention right now on forums and different play community sites is the part about your own hidden information, and that if your opponent asks you about your hidden information, you are not required to tell them the truth. So there were some people like, oh, but now this is going to lead to people lying and all this stuff. Well, let me give you a couple of examples of what is this hidden information. Your maneuver. You put down your maneuver. If your opponent even jokingly says, hey, did you do a too hard, and doesn't have any type of effect that grants them the right to look at your dial, you're not required to tell them the maneuver. I think it just protects players. Same thing with your plan of attack. If they tell you, hey, are you going to be flanking me with that ship or this one on the left? You're not required to tell them the truth. I think that's the only part of this that I think that's the only thing that really covers is, I mean, your strategy and your plans are, it's your business. And it's just a little line in there, I think, to give protection to the players. I can't think of anything malicious you can do with that. You guys have any thoughts on that?
No, I think it's fine. There's kind of a precedent for this in poker. So in poker at the table, part of the rule is to not actually reveal what your actual hand is. So you're almost encouraged to not to tell the truth. Like if you have a pair of kings, like you're not supposed to reveal those cards to anyone. Actually show them you have a pair of kings. You're better off lying and not telling them what you have so that no extra information is given away, hidden information. So it makes perfect sense to me.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure why a lot of people are going down the route that, oh, this is going to make the game unsportsmanlike and along those lines. I mean, if your opponent was asking you what maneuver you were doing, were you just telling them because they asked? I don't get what this really changes, but I think this might be setting up a precedent for something else.
Of course, dude, fly casual, man. Tell them.
Yeah, just fly casual, let me win. That's you know.
Some people get confused about what fly casual really means. And the other thing is, you know, it could also just be the same people freaking out about how taking a draw that was in the rules.
That's exactly what I was going to say.
You know,
it's on the mark.
You know, it's the same, you know, the what we call the vocal minority. So it is what it is. Like I said, there's a precedent for it. If you go look up the floor rules for like the World Poker Tour or, you know, the World Series of Poker, which is going on right now, they have almost the exact same rule. So to me, when I heard it, I was like, oh, okay, that's what they're doing. No big deal.
Mm-hmm. And it still also leaves you open to maybe bluffing and saying that you can tell them that you are going to do your maneuver and psych them out. So it actually opens up some mind games, too.
I mean, the whole point of this game, right, is to plot a maneuver and guess what your opponent's maneuver is. Why would you tell them the truth of your maneuver?
Yeah, exactly.
I'm going to lie every time. I have a 7K turn. How about them apples?
Now, actually, that would be breaking a rule.
I know it would, actually.
Yeah, I was going to say, now that you just said that, that's part of, I guess, would that be part of the derived information?
It would be.
Yeah, so we'll touch on that, I guess.
This is what we call transition.
Exactly. So the derived information is anything that should be or can be public knowledge within the game. They use the example in the FAQ for Korin. So say one player, they elect to use Korin's ability, you know, to double tap in the end phase. And during the next round, Korin's opponent says, hey, did Korin shoot last round? You can't say No, he didn't shoot. It, you know, you can't lie about that. That was public information. You have to answer honestly.
Yep. And that's where those little no fire tokens that you got with your K-Wing always come in handy. I bring those. I'll put those on my opponent's corn horn just so they don't forget.
Yep. I mean, that is
more importantly, so you don't forget.
Well, it's part of the game state, and, you know, marking it with tokens is how the game works. So, right? That's what we do.
It's fair. Both people can see it.
I'm going to touch on a couple of other little things. We kind of covered the big five that were in the FAQ. Quick Draw got a little bit of insurance, just like Dengar. They clarified that his when he loses a shield token, it takes his ability triggers during step 9 of the timing chart, which is the same slot where Dengar happens. So if you were to somehow do a shot on Quick Draw that would kill him, and he had, let's say, one shield left and he loses that shield, he gets to perform his retaliation attack before he would die. Not super likely, but it could happen. If you could eat 4 damage in one turn.
I'm glad they cleared this up, because I ran into this same... I was coming to a similar scenario when I got my hands on the Shadowcaster, you know, with the Shadowcaster title, where it's like, it says, you know, after you perform an attack, if that attack hits, you can tractor beam them. But in order for the attack to hit, a shield has to be removed from the Quick Draw. So then his ability would trigger. So I'm glad that they just clarified it, because, I mean, I knew what was supposed to happen, but I was playing against a new player, and without the flowchart, I don't think it would have been as easy to understand.
A couple of other things. Atani Mind Link was cleared up. I mean, this is just a common mistake with Atani Mind Link, is people just going crazy with focus tokens, and, oh, all my guys end up with like 4 focus tokens because all 4 of them focused and they all pass each other focus. You're limited to 1 if they have the token already. I mean, it's in the card text, but they go an extra mile to, you know, hyper clarify that. Boba Fett gets an extra line in his FAQ where they basically just say that, hey, if a ship gets a crit through that doesn't have Boba Fett on it and one of your other ships does, Boba Fett does not get to trigger. Has to be on the same ship. Everybody who plays this game, make sure you take some time, read through the FAQ. We didn't cover everything because we know you guys can read, I hope. and if you can't, let me know somehow, because that means you probably don't know how to type. Never mind. I'm gonna
head down to your local library.
Head down to your local library. Absolutely. So let's continue on to our next topic, and that is Sabine's Tie.
The Gold Squadron podcast is sponsored by Dragonfall, the Midwest premier gaming event. Visit dragon-fall.com for more information.
All right, so now we're going to cover the spoilers for Sabine's TIE Fighter. I'm going to just kind of give my initial reaction here. The abilities and the cards that are in this pack are a lot better than I thought they were going to be. I'll go out and say that. There's a lot of, I think, interesting new strategies and mechanics you can go throw out there. We'll talk about some of them as we go through the cards. Let's just start going through some cards here as soon as I go to the album of cards.
I'll start off with the pilots. So let's go here. So we got the first one is Captain Rex. He is PS4, and his ability is after you perform an attack, assign the suppressive fire condition card to the defender. So we have another of those new condition cards, and suppressive fire is as follows. When attacking a ship other than Captain Rex, roll 1 fewer attack die. When you declare an attack targeting Captain Rex, or when Captain Rex is destroyed, remove this card. At the end of the combat phase, if Captain Rex did not perform an attack, remove this card. So it's a good little shield ship, and you're making your opponent want to target Captain Rex, or else they'll have reduced attack values.
On top of that, you also change your opponent's game plan, right? Which is any type of card that does that is going to be you know, it's going to be effective. I'm excited to see how that's used. It's one that I think I'm, for me personally, I'm wrapping my head around and trying to see what's, how is it going to fit in a list? Because if you don't get a shot with Captain Rex, you lose the title, but I mean, you lose the condition card, but at least for that turn, it would affect the ship. So actually that's pretty good. Even if though it's for one turn. So next one is Sabine Wren. Andrea, go for that one.
Hey, immediately before you reveal your maneuver, you may perform a free boost or barrel roll action. And she's a PS5. I love that. It's awesome.
Yeah, 15 points with an EPT. Is this the first ship that she gets an EPT in? Right? Because the
yeah, I don't think the shuttle has it.
And the Shadowcaster doesn't have it either.
I'm fact-checking, but I want to say you're right.
Yeah, fact-checking. That's good. Keep us honest, Alex. Honest, Alex. That sounds
correct.
Good. Anyway.
Sabine does not have an EPT on the Lancer.
Yay. She gets it. And this is the same ability that she has in the shuttle. I think it works pretty well in a TIE fighter. Yeah. We were pretty sure this is what it was going to be when we were seeing the corner of the card. So, confirmed.
I think it's going to be great.
Ron, go. You know you want to do the next one. Go for it.
Yes, I'm very excited to talk about Ahsoka Tano. Pretty much my favorite Star Wars character at this point. Not sure why she's flying Sabine's TIE fighter, but maybe that'll be something we get to see in Rebels at some point.
Dun, dun, dun.
She is Fulcrum, you know.
Yeah, I mean, Fulcrum definitely flew the Ghost. Not sure about Ahsoka's awesomely painted stolen TIE. But I will take it in the game regardless. Her ability, at start of combat, you may spend one focus token to choose a friendly ship at range one. It may perform one free action.
They kind of hint at this combo in the article, but they don't just come out straight and say it. So you guys, let me know if this is good or if it's bad. So you take Ahsoka, right? You put VI on her, so she's a PS9.
Yep.
And then you take the captured TIE modification. Let's jump to that real quick.
Captured TIE.
TIE fighter only, rebel only modification. Enemy ships with a pilot skill value lower than yours cannot declare you as a target of an attack. After you perform an attack, or when you are the only ship, only remaining friendly ship in play, discard this card. So here's my idea. So we have our PS9 now. You take Recon Specialist, all right? Yep. And now you can't shoot her because she's at PS9. Most ships can't shoot at her, at least. And you just tag along with anybody who needs the extra focus token, and you just passing it off, and you still have one for yourself, so that if you do need to defend against a higher PS ship, or you know, you have your opportunity, a good opportunity to attack, you still have your focus token.
Hang on, I'm gonna cut in real quick, because did you say pass off focus token with her?
Well, not sorry, pass off an action, sorry.
Yeah.
Pass off an action. You pass off an action, so that maybe somebody could focus and target lock. You're getting a similar synergy as you get with Aaron Kraken, but I think on a more defensive ship. I mean, you can't attack it, right? Which makes it more defensive. And I think with the upgrades, a little bit cheaper than with Aaron Kraken.
And if she's focusing, it's not like squad leaders where she's losing her action because she'll still have a focus.
Exactly. That comes out to 23 points for free actions from a support ship. And if you add the EMP, you get even more shenanigans. Because she's like, you can't attack me. You can't attack me. I pop the EMP. That's not considered an attack. You still can't attack me.
They just got to clarify if EMP blows you up too.
I'm going to go ahead and say it does. And that's a good transition. So let's go into EMP device. So this is a unique illicit 2 points. During the combat phase, instead of performing any attacks, you may discard this card to assign 2 ion tokens to each ship at range 1. So since it doesn't say each other ship, and you are always at range 1 of yourself, I am going to say that this does include the ship you are on.
I think that's super cool.
I like it. It's thematic. It's a really good ability, so I like it. I'm going to try and use it.
I like the picture where it shows like all these little squares. I'm assuming those are like the parts of the EMP, and there's nobody in the pilot seat. They're just like throwing a TIE fighter with an EMP in the middle. Just like, just do it. Just blow it up.
I mean, this is like an exact scene from the show. So, I mean, Flavor Judge wins.
Very nice. And then we have also the Captain Rex crew card.
So he's 2 points, rebel only. After you perform an attack that does not hit, you may assign one focus token to your ship.
2 points for that. I don't know.
I'm not too hot on it. At least right now, not right now.
I agree. Yeah. I don't. I mean, for him to trigger, you have to completely whiff on your attack, and all it does is give you a focus. I mean, for two points, I feel like that's a really big opportunity cost.
Yeah, if it was something like after you perform an attack that does not hit, you may assign a focus token to your ship. Do not clear that focus token at the end step. I would be fine with that. Because then, like, you could use it the next turn. But, I don't know. This doesn't seem to be very good. Yeah, Captain Rex gives me a sad face. I'm not super excited about this
guy. He's old.
I don't care.
Yeah, he's old man Rex. He's Rex from Rebels.
He's wise. He's experienced.
And, honestly, he's not that old. He's probably, like, 30. But he's a
clones have accelerated aging. I'm gonna lore check that.
I know, that's why I said he's probably like 30.
No, he's older than that.
All right, we need somebody to go on the Facebook page and let us know in the time of Rebels what is
Rex's
Captain Rex's
age?
Yeah, mathematical age.
All I'm saying, Andrew, is you're picking a battle with Alex on Star Wars facts. You are in trouble.
That's high praise coming from you.
I'm just saying.
All right, and then the other thing that was kind of snuck into this article, I don't know if it was by accident or what, but we got a spoiler of the lowest PS U-Wing. It's PS2. We went through the stats last time. We'll go through them real quick here. You got 3 attack, 1 defense, which you can make 2 with the title, 4 hull, 4 shields, and it is 23 points. What are you guys' thoughts about that point cost for that ship?
I like it. I think it's going to be fair for what it is and what it can do.
I mean, it seems pretty good. 8 hull for 23 points. I mean, you're in like that kind of jump master range of efficiency without a combination of 5 busted upgrades. So I still think it'll be pretty good. It's got that systems upgrade, which is amazing. 2 crew slots is important to note. There are a lot of combinations of 2 crew that you could put on a ship that's really good.
All right, this list might not be good, but you could fit 2 ghosts and 1 of these in a list, right?
Depending on how you kite out the ghosts.
Yeah, if they're naked.
Yeah, I mean, you totally could.
Beefy and good firepower there.
That's a lot of hull.
Yeah, it's just a lot of hull.
I mean, it's like the national list, you know, with the 2 Lothal Rebels and the Y-Wing. It's the same thing.
It comes out to 40, same. Right?
Isn't a Y-Wing?
8 hull.
It has 5, 8 hull. Eight health total.
Eight total points of...
I was thinking it was 7.
It's 8. So yeah, it's exactly the same. It's just a matter, is this better than a Y-Wing? Probably is.
0 K-turns? Probably. You get 2 agility dice, depending on which side of the title.
There's
you
also something to be said as a third humongous ship for blocking purposes.
Let's take up all the room.
Yep.
I think the point cost is definitely going to open up some of the combinations you can do on the ship. And the starting point cost isn't going to inhibit you from trying out different combinations and upgrades while causing you to be afraid to spend points on the ship.
I'm excited to see that's what the base costs of the generics are. One thing I would like to see FFG focus on a little bit more is not so much of a focus on unique pilots only. Like, understood there was a long period of time for the game where uniques weren't played, and now it's like quite the opposite. I would like to see someone be able to run like a 4-ship, you know, generic list and actually have some success with it. It'd be interesting.
Yeah, we'll see if the U-Wing is going to make that happen. Maybe some type of Rebel Swarm thing.
Yeah, maybe. Or just, like I said, this like the old Biggs Walk the Dogs list used to be, you know, just 3 or 4 really good ships.
All right, so we're going to take a second here and just say a big thank you to everybody who has supported us on the Patreon page as of today. And today is October 17th. We have 32 patrons, and we are at $78 an episode. And that is amazing. In just having the Patreon up for 1 week, super excited about that. The first reward is coming very soon. I actually spoke to Mark Moriarty today, and the cards will be to me at my house in 10 business days. We're going to pack those up and send them off to everybody. If you haven't seen it yet, you can go to our podcast Facebook page. He made for us, we commissioned from him an awesome Asajj Ventress alt art card. I mean, it is amazing. She is looking super cool in front of her Shadowcaster with her lightsabers and her bounty hunter gear on. I mean, it's pretty sweet. So if you want one of those, and you know, it's only $2 per episode to be part of that. And we're going to be adding awards over time as well. So that's not the only thing you're getting. We're soon going to be reaching out to a couple of other artists, a very popular artist known as Paul LaRue, and some other surprises we have along the way. Super excited to get that going.
Yeah, there's something that you don't even know that we can do. I can kind of drop this right now.
We're
going to do some Gold Squadron backpacks or mailbags as a prize.
Oh, that's cool.
It'll have the Gold Squadron logo on it. The only way to get them will be to subscribe to the Patreon page. If you've ever seen Dion or I at an event, we have these backpacks. They look super sharp. So, yeah.
Excellent. So, our next thing we need to talk about here is our first ever Patreon giveaway. So we had a raffle for the first 25 people who signed up to be a patron of the Gold Squadron podcast. We had 3 copies of our Paul LaRue Trandoshan Slaver card made exclusively for Gold Squadron. We had 3 copies, and here are the winners. So we had Eric Zhang, Gordon Berg, and Cam. Shoot me an email at goldsquadronpodcast@gmail.com if I haven't got to you yet, and can't wait to get you your cards.
Always with you, what cannot be done. Hear you nothing that I say. You must unlearn what you have learned. Try not. Do. Or do not. There is no try.
So now we're returning to our How to Practice X-Wing series. We've talked about a lot of things already today, so this one's going to be a little bit shorter. We're going to be talking about step one. And Ron, what is step one?
Step one is one of the most important steps in practicing X-Wing. That is to find an opponent of preferably similar skill to you.
And, you know, one of the challenges I know for people, anybody who starts playing a game, say, all right, I like this game. How do I go about that? Now, let's be real. I mean, it's when you are walking into a game store and you want to play a game with somebody, it's a little bit uncomfortable. You see people playing X-Wing. I've never played X-Wing before with somebody else. Maybe you always played in your basement or something with a buddy, like I used to do before I started going to Pastimes. You know, I would say most X-Wing players are pretty friendly. You say, hey, I've been playing for this long. I'd like to play a game. You'll find somebody. A couple of other suggestions. If you have not been on Vassal before, if you just search X-Wing online, you'll find all the links and the software. There's a great community there where you can find players of many different skill levels and be able to put together lists decently fast. I mean, there's some downside because the translation to, you know, a computer screen to the board isn't quite the same, but at least you get to play some X-Wing. Like I said already, leave the basement. If it's just been you and your friend playing back and forth, that's great. You guys have built each other up. But being able to play a different opponent who you've never played before, you don't know their strategies or what they're used to doing or their lists. I mean, it just gives a little flavor.
Dion, that's a super good point that we never brought up. Leave your home to play X-Wing or any of these games in general. Like, being part of the community itself is rewarding. Meeting new people to share the passion in a game that you're with. And don't be afraid to go play someone else and possibly lose a game. It's a learning experience for both players. And typically you'll get more out of losing than you are winning anyways. The only reason you want to have an opponent of similar skill is so that the gap between winning and losing isn't so great that only one person is getting more out of that session than the other.
Absolutely. And our third point here with finding somebody else is find your local game store. Some of you might not even know that you have a game store pretty close to you. If you're in the Chicago area, we're in Niles, Illinois. I mean, most things in the Chicagoland area are really easily accessible through the highway. But, you know, reach out to them. Give them a call. Hey, does anybody play X-Wing at your store? They'll tell you a day. If so, if not, go check it out. If you didn't like that store or that feel or nobody shows up, try a different store. Don't give up. There's so many game stores popping up everywhere. Gaming is really popular nowadays. You'll find a community. Or even just going on Facebook and typing in, you know, whatever city you are, X-Wing, you'll probably find a page.
Yeah, that's a great point. That's exactly what I was going to say. Facebook is a phenomenal tool for meeting new X-Wing players. I mean, we have our group, right? We have the Gold Squadron. We have the Pastime Star Wars Gaming Group, where we have over 200-plus members. If you want to play a game, you could just post on the Facebook group, hey, it's Ron. I want to go play X-Wing on a Friday night. And you will most likely find someone to play with. It's that simple.
Absolutely. And another thing that I'd like to cover, when you are going out to seek people to play, know your intentions for the game. And I wanted to touch on this because in reality, we have two different types of players. We have your quote-unquote casual player. They are, I just want to play Star Wars. That's why I'm here. And if the intent of the person you're playing, if they know that, I think you could have a different experience than if you're playing against that person and you know that person is hardcore tournaments, which is nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with either one. It's just, what do you want to be? You might start casual and move into tournament. You might start tournament and float into casual. I mean, we have players at our store that do both. Like, they're like, hey, Ben is a perfect example. He's like, hey, I made this list just for shenanigans sake. My goal is to do this one trick in my list and everything's going to die, but it's going to be hilarious.
We have a couple players who do this. I mean, I'll be honest, I do the same thing. At Nationals, what I brought Luke Skywalker, T-65, Jet Porkins, T-65 X-Wing, and Biggs Darklighter. That was my list. It doesn't get more thematic and stupid than that. But it was fun, and they all died.
A glorious death. Yeah, so, you know, like I said, I'll just reiterate, know your intentions with what you want to play, be clear, and see where it goes from there. I'll say that when I started this game, I never intended to be a tournament player. I wanted to play Star Wars because that's what I really liked. I started going to pastimes. The rest is history. You know, I got fifth at the North American Championships at Gen Con, and now, like, I can't get enough competitive X-Wing. But I still have times where I'm ready to just be casual and play a thematic list or something like that. So don't ever lose that either. In our following episodes, we'll continue to go through these steps. Now, like we said, step one is really kind of simple, really short. Next episode, we're going to be diving a little bit more into step two. Step two of the series is selecting good lists that suit your play style. I mean, we're definitely going to be diving into that because list building is huge, and especially depending on what your intent is in the game, whether you're going to be playing casually or tournament. I mean, that can look like two totally different things, but we're going to cover that more next time.
Where are those transmissions you intercepted? What have you done with those plans?
We are to my favorite part of the segment, where we talk about upcoming events. We have a bunch. The first event that's coming up is actually our in-store Armada demo and game day event. That'll be on October 23rd. Registration time is at noon. Official start time is at 1. The next X-Wing related event, though, we have, I'm really excited. I think all of you guys have been a part of it. It's our Halloween themed Star Wars Rackul event. Have you guys all played in that?
That damn Rackul followed me so much.
This one will be new for me this year.
The plague was following it, like, knew my maneuver. It was ridiculous. It was so crazy.
You know what? It's fun. It gives a little wrinkle. It makes you play different choices in your squad. It kind of makes it so that those big multi-action ace ships aren't just dominating the game. It's quite a fun format, and it's just something different. It's Halloween themed. It actually makes sense that there's this Rackul invested plague ship on the map, and you don't know where it's going to go and if it's going to start turning your pilots and crew members into zombies. Next is this little tournament in Minnesota called World Championship. That's November 4th through the 5th. I know I'm going to be there. Andrew's going to be there. Dion's going to be there. Marcel, we have a bunch of guys going, so this is going to be a great time.
Sorry, Alex.
Womp womp.
I didn't want to rub it in.
It happened.
We also just finished the Dragonfall Cup, and one of our local guys was the winner, Marcel Manzano. I'm sure you've heard us mention him a few times. He was the national champion.
Marcel was running Triple Jump Masters. He was his last ride with Triple Jump Masters without knowing it. he ran that squad against Al. And not only did he win the championship, we had such a good turnout with Gold Squadron. Dragonfall this year was actually running this thing called the Squadron Cup. First time doing it. We're looking to expand it in the future. Well, we'll talk more about that later. But yeah, Gold Squadron won the first ever Squadron Cup, and it was great. I mean, we're going to be getting a trophy with our name on it, Stanley Cup style. Everybody gets to take it home for a day and, you know, take pictures with it and do weird things, but it's gonna be great.
Wait, are you serious? You get to take it home for one day and take pictures and then you got to give it back?
Yeah, we're gonna pass it around the squadron.
That's hilarious.
Yep.
Well, it's gonna hang out in the store until next year, right?
Well, it'll hang out in the store until they need it back to get ready for the next time.
Okay, that's fair. Because I would think it would be cool to have that in the store for a little bit.
Oh, absolutely. We'll have it for a while. We'll definitely have it for a while. All right, so let's close it out here. I want to thank all of our listeners and everyone who's liked our Facebook page. We actually got to over 300 likes. Last time I had said, let's get to 300 by the end of November. We're at 322 as of right now. Yeah, pretty sweet.
So
thank you, everybody.
By the end of November, guys.
That's what I'm talking about. End of November, let's get to 400. Get your grandma on Facebook, have her like the page. Okay, let's go.
That might open a can of worms. I don't know.
I'm just looking for numbers. Okay,
just get your parents who don't know how to use their phones, install a podcast app, subscribe. That's all you gotta do.
Yeah, that's what we're looking for. You know, we're on Twitter. We're at Gold Squadron. And if you're looking for coverage, we're going to have world coverage. Definitely like our Facebook page. We're going to have tons coming. We're going to have videos. We're going to have a roundtable with a bunch of the other podcasts. We're going to be posting all kinds of lists and live video there. And, of course, if you want to shoot us an email and ask for secret list advice from Gold Squadron Podcast, you can email us, goldsquadronpodcast@gmail.com. If you want to join our local play group and discussion group, go to pastimes.net/StarWars. Ron, thanks for being on.
Thank you for having me. As always, blast.
Andrea, thank you.
Thank you.
Alex, it's good to have you back.
Good to be back.
Thank you for listening, everybody. Gold Squadron out.